Hey everyone, welcome to Recovery Rocks. This episode is sponsored by our friends at SoberLink. SoberLink is this amazing app and device that is all about accountability. And as you know, listening to our show, Lisa and I are all about accountability.
To each other. And SoberLink is a great tool for anybody who wants to add sort of a next layer of accountability to their sobriety.
Absolutely. So head to our show notes to learn more about SoberLink or head to SoberLink.com. Hey, everyone. It is your favorite sober ladies, Tawny and
Lisa.
Hello, hello. And we have a fabulous guest with us today, Queen Pam Gaslow. Did I say, is it Gaslow? Gaslow?
Yes.
Awesome. Joining us today. I'm so jealous of the sunshine where you are. It's still very cold here in New York. All right. I'm going to read Pam's quick bio and we're just going to dive in. I think the most important thing to say is that Pam's book is called Don't Bring Your Vibrator to Rehab. As soon as I heard about this book, I was just like immediately drawn in. And you guys know I am very obsessed with sex and dating and that intersection of recovery and sex and dating. So I immediately was gravitated towards this book. So here's a little bit more about Pam. Pam has designed catalogs for J. Crew, performed stand-up comedy, and even worked as Henry Bendel's only female security guard. I feel like that's a whole other episode we can do at some point.
Totally.
Pam has had an eventful life, including once being threatened by her family with disownment over her depressed hot girl blog. And it's about to get even more so with this confessional, first person confessional, Don't Bring Your Vibrator to Rehab. So this book is a hilarious chronicle of Pam's journey toward sobriety from a toxic marijuana addiction, told with candor, honesty, absurdism, and her trademark wit. Pam, welcome to Recovery Rocks.
Thank you.
How are you today?
I'm great. I'm excited that you guys to be on this show.
Yes, we're excited to have you. And of course, like, you're on Recovery Rocks, so we are going to end every episode talking about music. So just keep that in the back of your mind.
Okay. It's not my area of expertise, but I'm going to try to, you know, wing it.
Well, if this relaxes you in any way, there's no wrong answers.
No, there are no wrong answers.
Okay.
We've had all kinds of answers and we're available for all of them.
Okay.
Absolutely. So Pam, tell us a little bit about your story in the book.
Okay. So my story is that I got sober initially in 1996, and I guess I'll, you know, go back to the beginning. And I did go to AA and went to meetings for many, many years, and I stayed sober for seven and a half years, and then I relapsed. And I relapsed on marijuana. I haven't had a drink, I'm just going to say, since 1996. So that's, you know, a big accomplishment for me. And it was something like, I think I was really done with drinking, and it actually really scared me. So I really never reached for that again, but I've had a few relapses with marijuana, and I had two long stints of sobriety. I had about 8 years each time, and both times I relapsed on weed and both times I went to rehab. So the first time I went to rehab was, I was 38 years old. And the second time I was 48, which obviously means I'm older than that now. And so the second time was the time that I wrote the book. When I wrote the book. So that was about 4 years ago now. And I just, you know, I had just moved to Miami. I didn't know anybody. I had a recent breakup, and I just, you know, one night there was nothing like major that happened. And mostly for me, never was. And I was hanging out with a guy, and I just got high with him. But for me, like, that triggered the addiction cycle all over again. And I, you know, within a month, I was just getting high around the clock, and I stayed high for around the clock, like literally 24/7 for 2 years straight. And in that time period, I just completely lost myself. And I was just like a shell of a person. I was depressed. I was lethargic. I was hopeless, and I was very, very sad. And, you know, that led me to going to treatment. And that's when that's what I wrote the book about, that whole journey.
And I will say, it's for listeners, it's a quick read. The book is 135 pages, and I love that you include photos.
I love all the graphic images in it. Yeah.
I mean, the photos turned out to be the biggest nightmare when I was like, you know, designing the book. Biggest nightmare, never again. But I think they're funny.
Yeah. It's like, so just to give listeners like a little mental image until they buy the book. I love that you have a photo of some Bumble conversations. You have, was this really your Bumble photo of you in one of those machines? Cause I'm obsessed.
Yeah, completely. And I did that image myself. Yeah.
That, can you describe that to the listeners? Because it is, Lisa, it's on page 24.
Yeah.
I photoshopped myself inside a crane machine, like a toy crane machine. That because you can't take any of that seriously anyway. Yeah. So why not? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's honestly brilliant. I'm obsessed.
Thank you.
So, okay. Thank you for sharing a little bit of that. And something that I highlighted in your book, like really stood out to me, was the question, do I really need rehab? And I wanted to ask you a little bit more about that. And if you could explain a little bit of that to our listeners, of, because I feel like that's something that, so Lisa went to rehab. She had treatment. I did not.
Well, I went to detox.
Detox.
Lisa, and then I went outpatient intensive at night.
Mm-hmm. When I first got sober, I did not go to rehab. I went to AA meetings, and that was enough for me at the time. But I just felt like I couldn't stop on my own. And my lifestyle was like, I live alone. I don't have kids. I don't have, you know, anyone to be responsible to or be accountable to. And it led me to be just do whatever I want, whenever I wanted. And I felt like I literally couldn't do it. Like I didn't want to go. I was like, okay, I'm going to go to outpatient, but I knew I didn't have the wherewithal, the strength to not get high before I went to outpatient. And after, I needed a head start. I needed to be like removed from my environment, you know? And I knew that's when I knew I had to go somewhere and just take a break from, and just, you know, get help.
I always tell people, you know, like, cause I went to the hospital for 5 days. I had to have a medicated detox, and I did not go away to treatment because I went right back to work, but I agreed to go cause I didn't want to tell my office, but I agreed to go 2 nights a week to outpatient at night. And I was like, really, I had the gift of desperation. So it worked out okay for me, but I always tell people, like, if you get the opportunity to go, just go. And go for as long as you can, like get out of that, whatever the cycle is, whatever the bubble is. And just, I feel like taking the time to just, what an opportunity to be removed and really go, okay, you know, what the fuck is going on? What do I want? And how do I want to pursue it?
Yeah. Another time I had a friend just literally come and stay with me for a week. Until I, had at least that much time. But, you know, I felt like I needed to go. And believe me, it was the last thing I wanted to do. And I put it off. You know, I woke up every day, probably for a year, knowing I needed to go and just saying, oh, forget it. I'll go tomorrow. I'll call tomorrow. You know, it's so much easier to keep getting high and reaching for a drug than, you know, facing the real issue and taking an action and doing something about it. We all know that, you know, because if it was so easy, everyone would do it.
Yeah. There's something else that really stood out to me in this book that, where you wrote this letter, Dear Pot. Mm. And I would love to just open up that conversation. Lisa and I have discussed this. I think it's hard to tell what Lisa and I have talked about on podcast episodes or just as friends, but I feel like we've talked about like writing alcohol a letter.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Like, as part of your, you know, whether you're sober curious or it like in long-term recovery, whatever it is, it can be really beneficial to write that substance a letter. And yours is like short and sweet and hilarious and ends with, P.S. you owe me $8,000 plus the rehab fee. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about your letter to pot.
Oh my God. They made me write it. I mean, it came out so easily. And when I look back, when I read the book, I don't even remember, right? I remember writing it, but I don't remember writing that. I was like, wow, I wrote that. That's, you know, but it's true. Like when you think about it, it's like fuck you to pot, you know, but it's just such a, for me, this is from my experience. Like for me, I consider it a very insidious drug because it seems harmless and I know it's legal everywhere. And I know people, there are so many beneficial people use it for so many different reasons. I'm not knocking pot. I'm knocking it for me. And for me, it took me to a very dark hole, you know, and like when you're, you know, the thing is when I have this conversation with people about weed, like they're like, a lot of people don't understand because they don't smoke like I smoked. Mm-hmm. You know, when you smoke casually or when you smoke medicinally or whatever, I don't know what it is, or you smoke for fun, you know, occasionally, or you manage it. That's great. Good for you. I wish I could be that person. You know, for me, it's like, I am like sucking on a weed pen. Like it's like, and you know, literally I might as well have like IV, you know, like every second I'm breathing. So when you put a substance like that into your body 24/7, you can't think, you know, you have no more feelings. You can't function like a normal human. You know, I couldn't read a menu in a restaurant. I was just like, you know, I was just sad. It made me very, very sad. And, you know, that's just my experience, what you do when you overdo something to that point. And yeah, that letter is just the truth. It's like, you fucked up my life. You owe me money. You know, like, look what you did to me. Look where I am now. I mean, help. So it's like, no, thank you. I'm like, I'm good. You know, stay out of my way now.
One of the freelance pieces that I wrote maybe a year or two ago was me calculating how much I spent on alcohol, and yeah. It was, I mean, this is like low ballpark. It was at least six figures, you know, just on alcohol when I was a binge drinking party girl for 10 plus years, I was bartending. And, you know, that figure was calculated based on going out, drinking until I blacked out a couple nights a week. That figure didn't include, you know, drugs. It didn't include the 2 a.m. like happy meals. It didn't include, you know, it doesn't include drunk purchases. And so I think like for listeners, like it could be, I love that in your note, you have the, you know, P.S. you owe me $8,000 plus.
I made that number up, but it's somewhere. Every day I would be like going to the ATM and taking out hundreds of dollars and I would feel so bad. I'm like, what are you doing with this money? Like, what are you doing with it? Like you're handing it to some guy so you can be mentally obliterated. Like that's not a life, you know, that's so sad.
I totally know that feeling. Yeah. Tawny always.
I could be doing something with this money, like something productive, you know?
Yeah. Tawny always laughs when, or I don't know, laughs or is in like some sort of horror when I tell her, like, I was like in my 30s, I just stopped contributing to my 401k at work because I thought I'd be dead by 40. And the money that went, like, with what I spent on alcohol and drugs over all those years, I mean, I could have funded a retirement.
It's so true and so sad. I mean, I think about what I've saved not drinking now and how much alcohol costs and just going out to like a nice restaurant. I mean, I'm a cheap date now.
Yeah, that's what my husband says I am.
It's true.
Yeah, it's totally true.
I'm like, totally give me a sushi roll and like a Perrier and I'm happy.
That's right.
I love that. That's hilarious.
And an orgasm. I had to throw that in.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Perfect. Let's
I knew we were going there. Yeah.
Thank you for that. I was like, how can I segue into the title of the book? So Pam took care of it. Yeah, let's talk about that, please. Go on.
No, it is funny. And I got the line. There's this guy I date or whatever. And he's like, you're so easy. He's like, I give you an orgasm and a sushi roll and you're happy. And I'm like, it's so true. I really don't need anything else. Okay, so the title. Okay, so when I was like researching what rehab to go to, they send you information and they send you lists of things you can and cannot bring. Like, I don't know why this is the biggest thing at rehab. Like, and the lists are really long and ridiculous. And, you know, one of them said you cannot bring, I mean, they had things like glass objects and like musical instruments. I'm like, what is a glass object? Like, what are we talking about? And one of them said, you can't bring a teddy bear. I'm like, that's weird. I wonder why I can't bring a teddy bear. I'm like, maybe because people hide drugs in them.
Probably.
And I was like, okay. Yeah. I'm like, first of all, how old are you that you're bringing a teddy bear to rehab? Let's talk about that. But I was
thinking humping the teddy bear.
I'm thinking people like hide drugs in it, but I never asked.
That's what I would have thought. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, okay, that's cute. I'm going to call it, don't bring your teddy bear to rehab. And then when I kept like searching, and then another one said, the one I actually went to, it said, you cannot bring any sexual objects. So I was like, oh, I'm calling it, don't bring your vibrator to rehab. That's so much better than teddy bear. So, yeah.
I remember just checking in, showing up like in a total blur. And I had my bag packed and my friend had packed my bag for the hospital and thought like, oh, you never know who you're going to meet. And she packed like these negligees and said like I was going to meet Robert Downey Jr. in the psych ward.
And oh my God.
I remember like the nurse, like they, cause I just showed up with the one bag they let me take. And I remember her just going through my shit, you know,
yep.
And all that bag and just looking at me like, what is this?
That's hysterical. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Needless to say.
I did not. Right. I did not bring my vibrator rehab. I mean, it depends if you want to go to, if you go to the fancy rehab, you might need it.
Yeah.
I'm just looking through to see like all the things that I've highlighted. I would love to hear a little bit more about, if you're comfortable, I'm kind of throwing this at you. Just sober sex and dating. You touch on it in the book a little bit with your hilarious profile. But like, just, yeah, anything come up with that you feel comfortable sharing of like, should I put sober on my dating profile? When can I tell someone, you know?
Okay. I don't even date anymore. Guys, I just gave up on that.
Just the vibrator.
Just the vibrator now. It's just easier. Well, I when I was on those sites, no, I did not. I don't think I put that I was sober. I just didn't think to do that. Maybe I don't know. I don't remember, but I don't think I did because I don't think people read anyway. I don't think anyone actually pays attention. And I'll tell people, I don't like blurt it out, but I'll sort of like, and I'm very direct now. I'll be like, are you a drug addict to someone, you know, cause like, I don't have time, you know,
yeah.
And you know, I don't smoke weed. Do you like, I want to know, like if there's someone I'm going out with everyone lies anyway about, you know, how much they do or don't do. And I try to get that out of the way because I'm too old now to like waste time with people like that. But, you know, I have no problem telling people I'm sober and I never did. And I just like, it's something I'm proud of. And I feel like if you want to judge me for that, or if you have a problem with it, then you probably have a problem yourself and we're not going to be a couple anyway. So,
right.
You know, like I'm not embarrassed about it. I'm an adult. Like, I think it's an accomplishment, but like I said, I don't just like get on the phone with someone and be like, oh my God, I'm sober, you know? So usually it'll come out in the course of a normal conversation, but I wouldn't wait much past the first date anyway, especially if someone's having like three drinks and, you know, then I'm like, I'm done, you know?
Yeah.
So
one of the things that I wanted to ask you about was that, you know, we talk a lot about on this podcast about relapse and coming back from relapse and how grateful we are to see people when they come back from relapse and how it's part of so many people's, most people's story. What would you tell our listeners who are sitting there? Maybe they've relapsed or they are back from a relapse and still feeling some sort of feelings around that. You know, like some people feel like they did something wrong, whereas we really view it as like it's part of a lot of people's journey. And all that matters is kind of today and where you are today. Can you talk a little bit about coming back?
Sure. You know, when I first got sober, I was 26 years old. And I remember thinking, if I stay sober in 25 years, I'm going to have, or when I'm 50, whatever, 51, I'll have 20, 50, whatever. I don't even know what I'm saying anymore. I'll have 25 years. So, you know, I relapsed, and I was, when I first relapsed, I felt, I was so upset that I, quote, lost my time.
Right.
And it was so hard for me because I was like, well, if I only have a week, why don't I just go get high again? Because what's the difference? And like, I threw away all these years. And, you know, as I got older and I relapsed again and it got worse and it got harder to come back, I started looking at it totally differently. And I remember thinking when I went to treatment, I'm like, oh my God, I have a day. And I was so happy because I couldn't get a day for 2 years. And I'm like, it doesn't matter anymore. I was so miserable. I'm like, it's not your time. It's not your ego. It's your life, you know, and it's your, it's today. And that the fact that I didn't pick up a substance today, I'm so happy. And then I had tomorrow and that, you know, and it's just like, so anyone that relapses, like, I know it's hard, but it doesn't matter. And you don't lose anything. You have all the knowledge, all the wisdom that, you know, you've had in sobriety, if you had sobriety, and it doesn't matter. It matters how you are today. So it's just an ego thing and, you know, get over it and save your life.
That's why I love the term recovery more, almost more than sober, because recovery, I feel like, is inclusive of those slips, of those lapses and judgment, where it's like, because you can, I feel like you can say, like, you've been in recovery since 26. Like, it's been a very, like, it, you've been on that journey. And I like looking at it like that because it feels more inclusive and it gives me, like, I guess, gives me permission to maybe be a human, you know, and make mistakes. And I understand there is a lot of focus on the counting days. And I guess this might be because I don't come from the 12-step world. And, you know, I have had 6.5 years of continuous, quote, sobriety. Like, I've not had a drink on purpose. I've accidentally had a couple drink, like a couple sips. We've done a whole episode on accidental sips. But, you know, it does, it feels good to have, like, no, for 6.5 years, I've chosen to not drink. But it's also just holding space for, I acknowledge that, like, life happens. And if, I don't know what's going to happen when some, when a parent passes away, or when, you know, I don't know how I'm going to cope with that. But using the word recovery, I feel like helps me give myself grace and for future me. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, I like that. I think that's a good thing. You know, I don't know what I was thinking, but I remember when I first got sober thinking, I'm never going to relapse. Never. Like, it's so arrogant that I even thought that. Like, I really thought I was going to be that person.
Yeah.
And when you talk about a parent dying, you know, I think about things like that. And I think, like, they always say, it's like the broken shoelace that, like, we, like, relapse over. It's not the big things. It's like, oh, fuck, you know, whatever, like, some stupid thing. And, like, the times that I've gotten high were with men in, like, sexual situations. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, very seductive to me. And I just, you know, it was just dumb stuff that I came out of nowhere. And it's like embarrassing. I'm just saying, cause it's like what happened to me, but it's just like, I'm like, you, what was that worth it? That was just stupid. You know, like, stay out of situations that, like, trigger you, or, you know, stupid. Yeah. Avoidable.
But yeah, giving yourself grace too, of like,
oh
yeah, it's okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay. I mean, it is what it is now.
There was a guy in my outpatient who had, he'd gotten 90 days and he had gotten 90 days for, I don't know, like the third time or the fifth time, whatever it was. And then he went out and celebrated with an 8-ball. And I remember saying to him, like, what happened when you, you know, what did it? And he was like, well, my friend Bill called and I went out with him. I was like, wait, what? Like, so what? Like, you know? And he was like, no, I knew when I went out with him that I was going to drink. And if I drank, I was going to use. And I thought I could somehow, like, not do that. And the bottom line is, I shouldn't have gone out with Bill. And, you know, this was within 90 days and all that stuff. But I remember saying to him, like, I want to know what happens because I am terrified of relapse. And he just said to me, a healthy fear of relapse is always a good thing, you know? But then then there's the next step, which is, but you come back.
But you don't always come back. And it's hard to come back.
It is hard to come back. Right.
He came back right after me. You know how many people can't? I didn't come back for 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people die.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And it's also just like more wreckage. It's just more years of weight of just bad stuff. Like, I don't think so many good things happen. That's just my personal opinion.
I have never heard someone come back from a relapse and be like, that was fun. You know?
Because then
like,
they would, if you know what, because if it was fun, they wouldn't come back.
And it's not fun. Like, I feel like once you live, there's just a lot that goes with getting sober besides like the not picking up a drink. For me, at least, it was like self-respect, self-esteem.
Totally.
And, you know, that is something that I want to hang on to. But I also feel like what we were talking about now, like I celebrated 18 years last week and I've never said I won't.
Yes, Lisa.
It's amazing.
Thank you. I've never said I'm not going to drink again because that's too much. It's always been too much. I always just like, I still don't say it. I don't drink today. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like if I did relapse tomorrow, there is no way that the work I did during recovery just disappears. Like that. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's scary. You know, we embrace people when they come into back from a relapse because we were just so grateful to see them because, you know, like you said, it's always, there's always a real significant chance they won't.
And also sobriety like ruins your getting high and drinking. It's you can't get that out of your head. I mean, like the first time, like I got high when I, after being sober for so many years, I was like, is lightning going to strike me? Like you really feel like, you're like, oh my God. And it's just such a weird feeling. Like I'm not supposed to be doing this. And it's just constantly, constantly in the back of your head for me, you know, this is not what I'm supposed to be doing. And I know I have to stop. I just don't know when or how. And it's just terrible. How can you relax and have fun when that's what you're thinking, you know?
Right. Right.
That's real. I'm actually writing that quote down because that really stuck with me. Let's wrap it up with the music minute.
Yeah.
Is there a...
What does that mean to me? What do I have to do? Do I have to sing?
No.
Yes, you have to sing a song in perfect pitch. No, just is there a song that maybe means something in your recovery or even just, it doesn't have to be recovery related. Is there just a song
what are
or
you
an
listening
album that
to
you
now?
Love right now?
Yeah.
Oh my God. What about Because I Got High? You guys know that.
Oh my God. Afro Man.
That song is so amazing. It's just, it's ridiculous. I still listen
to that and Colt 45 and it's absurd, but
it's so good though.
I love it. Yeah. I could sing every single word to Colt 45. It's so stupid.
I don't have like a song. I'm just thinking, oh my God, I was going to say like Addicted to Love. Yikes.
Ooh.
you know, let's switch seats on the Titanic now. And like, you mean that would describe how I feel today? What do I listen to?
What are you listening to now?
Right now? I'm talking to you. What do I listen to? I don't know. I walk around and I just Shazam songs in stores and wherever I am. And
funny. The best app.
Yeah. And then I'm like, those are my new songs. There's a marina behind, this is a funny story. There's a marina behind my building in Miami and people are, you know, idiots and they blast music on their boats like at 1 a.m. Like, it's just so rude. So like one night I was like, well, but that's actually a good song. And I like Shazam the song. Wait. And then I called the police. I'm like, all right, it's good, but like, I don't want to hear it. And you know, this is not happening. I like glass animals. Do you guys know them?
Yeah.
I like that. I think it's very chill, like kind of sexy, relaxing. Like that's like a vibe I can like, you know, I like them. That's just my one group I'm throwing out there.
You know, this is so weird. They were just nominated for Best New Artist at the Grammys a couple weeks ago, and they're not a new artist.
I was just going to say, are they new?
I had to do a double take. I was like, Glass Animals? Like, along with Olivia Rodrigo? Like, what?
That's totally random.
Yeah, they've been around, but okay. No, you totally crushed the Music Minute section. I know you're nervous.
Yes, fantastic.
I was like, oh my God, I have to make something up.
Pam, let people know where they can find you on the internet and where they can grab your book.
My book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, I guess iBooks, wherever books are sold. And my website is pamgaslow.com, PAMGASLOW.com. And I'm on Instagram at pamgaslow.
Perfect. And we will have links to all of that in the show notes. So if you're listening and you want to grab her book, we'll make it as easy as possible for you. Pam, thank you so much for hanging out with us today.
Yay. It was so much fun. Thank you.
Thank you for coming on.
Yay.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. You can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.